Radio.
The Power of Beauty, an interview with Dr. Renee Collar Ryan.
So I'm joined here today by Dr. Renee Collar Ryan. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Luke.
Now, I just wanted to first ask concerning beauty, just go right back to the basics, what is beauty exactly?
Well, that is an excellent question, and students ask me that all the time, what is beauty? We have this idea that beauty is only in the eye of the beholder. It's like this saying that, you know, everyone bandies around. And so people tend to think that beauty is just about us. It's just about what I see. But actually, there's a whole tradition of thinking about beauty that says that beauty is something that tells us or indicates something about being itself. So to get a little bit metaphysical, there's a whole argument in philosophy about whether beauty is on the same level as being as a transcendental. So a transcendental is what we call something that is convertible with being. So basically you would say that if something is, then it is good, that it is true. So whether you can say that if something is, then it is true, it is good, and it is beautiful. That's where a lot of the discussion comes out within philosophy. I think that in Australian culture we have a great way of thinking about this because we have a little idiom where if something is really good and you just think it's great, you'll say, you beauty. And I think that that is actually more the sense of beauty that I like to work with, to say that if something is good, it actually really is beautiful. And the more we realise that, the more attracted we become to it. Just as the more we know the truth, we become more and more attracted to it. The more we know beauty and what it's all about, the more we become attracted to it. It works the same with the good as well. The more you know what the good is, the more you can work toward it.
Just looking at that from the other way, because I think that, as you're talking about, there's a lot of arguments that I find that when people bring up beauty, you can be like, yes, but, you know, I find my wife beautiful and someone else might not. Or someone might think that blue poles was the biggest waste of money that the federal government ever made, and some people might think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And so sometimes people can get confused about what is beauty then, if we all seem to have our own concept of it. Does that affect the definition of beauty? And second part of that question is, what is not beautiful?
Yeah. So those are great questions, of course. This whole idea that if I think that something is beautiful, you can't argue with me about it, and I can't argue with you if you tell me that something is beautiful. I think there is actually something to that, but it's in a less fundamental sense. So, you know, some people will say, well, the beautiful is just sort of what attracts me, what I find nice, what I want to be around, that kind of thing. And of course, we all have our personal tastes and our personal interests. But when you actually get down a bit further than that, that's when you get to the heart of what beauty really is. It's something that surprises you because it goes beyond mere personal preference and it strikes to the core of what it actually means to be a human person. So that's where I find beauty very interesting, because when you get to that really fundamental sense, you might search for it in all sorts of ways and have arguments about, you know, what piece of artwork you find compelling or attractive or beautiful, and what kind another friend does, what kind of, you know, whether you like blondes or brunettes, or whether you, you know, find a certain style of clothing attractive or a certain style of house or whatever. You can have all of those arguments, but beauty itself is actually far more than that, I would say. Beauty itself surprises you, astonishes you, and there are sort of moments of appreciating beauty in your life that go beyond all of those other kind of surface considerations, even though, of course, they need to always be kept in mind. So beauty surprises you, and you also need to be educated into beauty, I think, by a culture also, and that's where the arts are incredibly important. We need to constantly have artists around us who are presenting us with possibilities for what is beautiful and what is not beautiful. And that gets to your second question. In a lot of contemporary art, I mean, there's a lot of wonderful contemporary art out there, but some contemporary art does seem to want us to actually be disgusted. So they're actually giving us presentations of ugliness, as though there is something true, maybe, about ugliness. In a way, they have it right, because beauty always shocks us, and beauty tells us something about truth, but it shocks us in a different way than ugliness does. So with something that is ugly, we know that it's ugly because there's something not quite right about it. We know that something else should be there and it's not. So it's like it's a negation of what should be there. With the beautiful, it's something else. It's so full of meaning that that's what shocks you. So that's what I'd say the difference is there between the beautiful and the ugly.
Recently, Father Robert Barron, over at the LA Religious Conference, mentioned that in evangelization, we should lead with beauty and then the good and then the true. Now, not necessarily going into the religious or evangelistic aspects of that, first of all, I think what he's trying to say there is that our culture and humans in general tend to see beauty more than they would see the good and the true. It tends to be something that you can explain easier. It tends to be something you can lead with if you're talking about God, yeah, for example, because most people would have some kind of experience with it. Can you explain that a little bit more? Why, first of all, if you agree that the culture does see beauty more or recognizes beauty more than the true or the good, and secondly, what that means for us in attempting to try and speak to the culture?
Yeah. Well, our culture, and this is something that I think Father Barron is very aware of because he seems to have his finger on the pulse of our culture is extremely visual. And I think that's to do with the fact that, you know, we're looking at the internet all the time. We're looking at smartphones. It's very hard to capture people's attention except with something visual that is striking. And that's where beauty comes in. So I think that that's part of what's going on there. That whole idea of leading from beauty to the good, to the true, is very much in keeping with what Cardinal Ratzinger, or as we know him now, our Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, has talked about. Because he's talked about beauty to a great extent, and he thinks that we need to surround ourselves with beauty as a kind of way of educating ourselves about what reality is about, but also as a way to, I think, give witness to the world as to what reality is about.
Is it something that's really specific to our culture now in the 21st century, or do you think that that's something that down the ages, that beauty has been something that's much more present to people and much more understandable, for want of a better term, common folk?
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that's just, I guess, a constant in human experience?
It's a constant in human experience, and that's because we are body and soul together. So, you know, what we are finding out through our senses always tells us something about the world, and at the same time tells us something about ourselves. And that's why the church, in responding to that and knowing that, has this tradition of working with beauty in various different ways. The church has always been a great patron of the arts. The church has always been involved in huge building projects, particularly with churches, with music, with liturgy, all of these different things. They're extremely pressing concerns, and I think that's for a few different reasons. One is that if you have something beautiful to work with, it elevates the spirit. It brings you closer to God. And there are all sorts of reasons that you could go into for that. But another one is that it's a way of enabling us to get closer and closer to what is good, because you're not going to find real beauty detached from what goodness is. And if we want to become better at knowing what reality is, but also in conveying that to others, then we need to become very close friends with beauty and be able to work with it in all sorts of different ways.
Mm. Just going back to, you mentioned there about the church working with beauty and using beauty. I guess just kind of winding that back to something a little bit more fundamental. Because the church, I guess, considers beauty to be so important, to me that would imply that the church sees that beauty says something about God.
Yes.
Can you explain that a little bit more? What exactly does beauty say about God?
Ah, that's a very, very interesting question. So what does beauty say about God? Augustine said that God is beauty, so ancient and so new. So Augustine is someone who throughout his life felt compelled to find God, and what he was looking for all the time was that which was the most beautiful, and at the same time the most fulfilling. So that which would completely fill his senses and his imagination, but not with anything empty. Beauty always points toward God, for Augustine and throughout the church's tradition, and it does so because, here I'm speaking sort of in a tautology, because God is beautiful. But with God, it's not just an adjective. There's something substantially beautiful about God. And what does that mean? That means that God transcends us, he goes beyond us, and he has the capacity to strike us, to shock us into realizing something about ourselves that we would not have realized otherwise. And the best way, one of the best ways, I don't want to presume for God, but one of the best ways that he seems to use for us is to appeal to us as sensory human beings, as human beings who have senses. And that's a good thing, that our senses can enable us to find the beautiful. And from the beautiful, we can proceed toward what is good and toward what is true.
Just on the notion of beauty, proceeding towards God there, with beauty, is it meant to draw us, I guess, towards God as an individual entity outside of that thing? Or is there something, I guess, of God within that thing that's evoking the response within me?
You're getting very philosophical here. So, so what I think is happening in the way that I tend to think about beauty is that God is not a separate entity from his creation. So I suppose we need to go back a little bit first. And I'm working from a very Augustinian understanding here, so I'll be upfront about that. So Augustine's understanding is that God is not separate from his creation. He's always speaking through his creation. And it's not as though God just decided, oh, this is great, I'm going to make creation and then I'll just step out of it and it can do its own thing. Instead, he's constantly there, not interfering, but constantly showing himself through creation, and especially in the things that are beautiful. So God's creation, the universe that he gives us, is itself beautiful, and it's a first indicator to us of what he might be like. He made this, and whatever someone makes tells you something of the maker. So for Augustine, the fact that the physical world is beautiful and we are given senses to appreciate it tells us something about God, that God is not separate from his creation, that he's constantly trying to speak to us, and he'll speak to us in many different ways. One of the best ways that he has is to speak to us through the beauty of what he has made and continues to make.
Now, again, you spoke about the church's contribution to beauty, I guess, if I can put it that way. How has the church done that in the past? You gave a couple of examples, but just, I guess, explain that a little bit more, how the church has tried to evoke beauty within the followers of Christ and with, I guess, potential followers of Christ.
Yeah, well, one of the aspects or one of the ways that I'm most interested in with how the church has done this is through its architecture. So just the different ways that the church has found in different stages of history to respond to what's going on on culturally with these wonderful spaces that give you both, a perspective from the outside and from the inside. So often you will find that a church is, classically speaking, much taller than a lot of other buildings. It will soar up toward the sky. So it already, believers and non-believers can see along the horizon or the skyscape of a city or a town, they can see the church. And that gives them something to think about. Whether or not that they do is another story. But it's a strong indicator that this is what being a human being is about. It's about reaching up as high as you can go and forming a relationship with what transcends and ultimately with God. So that already serves as an indicator for society that we think that this is important. So that's one thing. But getting back to the beauty question, these spaces, at their very best, have pushed the limits of what we can do physically and also in terms of art. So I think the Gothic style of architecture, we have a lot of neo-Gothic architecture in Australia. When you go to see the Gothic architecture, particularly in Europe, say in France, Chartres Cathedral, for example, when you first see Chartres Cathedral, you're sort of standing there next to it and your eye goes up and up and up and up and up. It seems like it's never going to end. And then you see that there are all these details around every single door on the outside, and there are these gargoyles and there are these amazing things. And then you see these windows, and then you go inside and it's a different experience again, to see the light coming through the windows, to see the way that everything leads toward the altar. And the church has a rich understanding of symbolism. So, you can look around at all the stained glass windows and the statues, and every one of them has a story that has to do not only with our past as a church, but with each one of us individually. And there's just something very beautiful about bringing all of those elements together and bringing a person into a space that has meaning in so many different ways. The more you look into it, the more you find out about how much thought has gone into this and how much the makers were focused on beauty. There's a little detail that I really like about Gothic architecture, which is that the architects and artists would often carve or decorate little parts of the church that they knew no one was going to see. So they thought that it was really, it had to be part of every aspect of the church that it be beautiful, whether or not we see it. So that tells you something about the way that they were thinking about beauty as well.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Father Robert Barron's comments, finally going to bring the evangelization part into it. I guess here in Australia and through Europe, just speaking about Europe before, and the United States, we're seeing that, I guess, these cultures are rather post-Christian cultures, tends to be the term that's used. That is, they were once heavily Christian societies, and now they're falling into secularism, atheism, kind of vague modern paganism, that kind of thing. Do you think that, you know, this society, that if you go up to them and try to speak to them about God, they say, I already know about that. You know, I went to church as a kid, you know, I was baptized, my parents talked to me about God, I already know that. You're not going to tell me anything new. Do you think then that beauty, something that kind of cuts through that, is a way that we can, as a church, re-evangelize the culture?
Yes, I think so, absolutely. And I think the church has recognized that for a very long time now. So when it was coming up with these different kinds of architecture, often these different modes of architecture, to go back to my example, came about in times of really dire need. I actually think that we need a new kind of architecture now. One that's familiar enough, but also a bit unfamiliar, so that it strikes people and they sort of say, oh, I didn't know the church could come up with that. That's awesome. That's cutting edge. And it's beautiful. And why is it that the church is coming up with that? I thought the church was all about all that other stuff that I learned or didn't learn properly earlier. But it's actually about something else. I think that that's a real way of engaging people. So, for example, Baroque architecture, which some people can think is absolutely over the top, far out there, you know, just too much. You can think of St. Peter's Basilica. Some people go in and they go, wow. Others go in and they go, what is going on here? I do not like this. This is way too much. Baroque architecture was a response to what was going on during the time of the Reformation. It was a response to what was happening, you know, arguments about faith and grace, sola scriptura, does faith alone save, what is the power of reason, are the senses good or should we be going away from them? Huge time of iconoclasm going on. Beautiful spaces were being painted over, whitewashed. We know that the church that Shakespeare was going to church in as a little boy was covered in all of these magnificent paintings that have only been uncovered recently. So we know what was sparking the imagination of little William Shakespeare as he went to church with his family every Sunday. That was being lost during that time, and the Baroque was a way of reacting completely in the opposite direction, which we now say is too much. Well, we probably need something else now. But we need some good architects and some good artists to be out there knowing their faith, knowing the culture, and able to come up with something. I can't do that. I can just theorize about it. But if anyone is listening and in that game, then this is what they should be doing right now.
Yeah, well, hopefully there's some budding architects or painters or artists out there who want to put their great God-given skills to the work of evangelization.
That was an interview with Dr. Renee Coleride. And for more interviews, shows, and talks, visit cradio.org.au.